Well, I was in Korea. We got there in the month of July, and over there they had the monsoon season, which it set in raining in July and rained for almost 2 months solid. But the strange thing about it was it rained every day, sometimes rain and sunshine at the same time, but it never thundered and lightning. I never remember seeing it except maybe one time in over 14 months did I see it thunder and lightning during all that rain or anything while I was there. And at that one particular time, it was coming, it came a small tornado. And that's the only time I ever seen it thunder and lightning. And a lot of times over there, they cautioned us about, they didn't want us to drink their water because, you know, it could be contaminated, be bad. And they cautioned us about going off the military base and eating their food because you didn't know what you were eating. You never did see much, any animals hardly over there. Every once in a while you would see a pig and very few, and of course the oxen, they still work oxen out in their fields, some of them did. But you didn't see any cats. I never saw a cat all the time I was over there. We never did know if they ate them or if there just wasn't any cats. And dogs, every once in a while you see a dog, and people had a few dogs around. Sometimes they disappeared. So, you know, if you were down in the village and you bought you something to eat, you could be eating anything. But we were kind of cautious about what we ate and where we ate. And I remember, too, those people, they liked hot foods. They used to beg us to buy them jars of pepper at the commissary. We'd go there, and when we get paid, a lot of times they beg us to buy hot peppers, and they could take a jar of it and eat the whole jar without anything. They didn't eat it with it, they'd eat it by itself. They loved the hot peppers. Sometimes they would grow a few over there, and they would store them up to have as long as they could, try to preserve them. But their main crop, like I said earlier, was rice. They depended solely on rice. They eat rice 3 times a day. And kimchi. Kimchi is a green food, something like turnip greens that we'd have here, only it smells awful. It's got the awful smell. You can't stand to smell it cooking or eat it. I couldn't stand it eating. You could smell it a long way off. It was just awful. And they also grow, they had a little cash crop they grow around in yards and they're around behind their little huts and stuff. It's called marijuana. they grow that pretty freely in a lot of places, but of course.
I guess they were figuring on that they could get pretty good business selling that to some of the servicemen, huh?
Yeah, they sold that to them DIs left and right. We had some that occasionally got messed up on that stuff. Never did have none that got in any big trouble, but they'd get messed up every once in a while. I remember, too, biggest thing I remember about the whole place was we had a first sergeant. Just about everybody hated him. And I know one time I was pulling security duty on the main gate, and we didn't have many .45 pistols, and most of the time the ones that had a .45, they took them with them when they went to pick up payroll or something. And when we went out to our gate, we had to carry an M16 with us all the time, supposed to have it across our shoulder. I remember the first sergeant, and the company commander had been off down in the village, and they come back in the gate, and there was one of our vehicles was coming in the gate, and I walked out and opened the gate for the vehicle, and I walked out there without my M16. It was sitting in my guard shack, and that first sergeant and the company commander, they walked through the pedestrian gate, and when I got back in my guard shack, they were standing there holding my M16 up in their hand, and he said, soldier said, you let just anybody walk in here and pick up your weapon? I said, no, sir, I don't let anybody that's not authorized to look at it. Well, that didn't go over real good because him and that company commander were both authorized to look at it. And he thought us being smart. So he told me, he said, I want to see you and your MP sergeant in my orderly room first thing in the morning. So next morning, me and my MP sergeant was in his orderly room, and he told him if he didn't like us not wagging that M16 to that gate every time we went, he better get some 45s there. And that was just about the end of that because he was authorized to look at it anyway. He said, you must have just got over here the way you act. And I said, no, I've just been here about 9 months. He said, been here 9 months and talk like, you know, you just let anybody walk in here and pick up this weapon. That's when I told him again, no, not anybody that wasn't authorized to look at it. But I remember we disliked him so bad that we'd wait in the afternoon. We had to lower the flag every day and take it down. And we'd wait to try to catch him coming out of the mess hall. We stood there 5-10 minutes at a time sometimes waiting on him to come out where he'd have to stop and salute that flag as it come down. We used to do that all the time. I know, too, there's a lot of little incidents that happened, you know, that you forget about. But I had a friend that was from Michigan, and he was a real, real straight dude. I thought, one night he told me, he said, I'm in trouble. And I said, asked him what it was, and he told me, he said, I stole an M14 from my arms room, go sell it. And he said, I couldn't get rid of it, and he said, I can't get it back in there. So he talked me into helping him get it back in there. So that late that night when I made rounds checking, I went to the arms room and helped him get that M14 back in there. But I think that broke him, ended his career on stealing anything, because I didn't know of him stealing anything else. A lot of the guys would black market a little bit of stuff. You could sell a $10 fan for $50 real easy, buy it at PX and take it down there and sell it to them Koreans, which you weren't supposed to be selling anything to them because it was black marketing. We had a 21-year-old company commander, was a captain, and I found out later that he got caught for selling a deuce and a half truck to the North Koreans for $10,000. And he got barred from reenlistment and busted to a sergeant. And, of course, I guess that made about an end for his military career. But he had later married a Korean, and I understand he had all of his money that he had made in a Swiss bank account, so they couldn't touch his money, even though he got busted from a captain back to a sergeant.
While you were over there, back here in Alabama, did you have much contact with family?
Yeah, I wrote every letter I could write. I kept them letters coming. That made my whole day. If I didn't get any mail, I felt down in the dumps.
Did they seem like they were worried about you?
Yeah, mother and them worried about me all the time, and I guess other people did too, some of them. But I kept them letters coming just as fast as I could turn them around and get them back. Had several people wrote me letters. That helped out a whole lot. I know a bad thing was when we first got over to Korea, when we landed at Kempo Air Base in Kempo, Korea, there was a bunch of soldiers there fixing to board that plane that we got off of, and they were hollering, you know, they're going home. And they was rubbing it in on us because we was just getting there. But about 14 months later, we got to leave, too, from that same base we come in at. And that was the shortest runway that I've ever been on, I guess, in an airport. And when you took off, you went straight towards the mountain, and you had to get up real fast and get over that mountain. There wasn't no other way to go. You just had to get up and get over it. But I remember too, there back when somebody died over there, they celebrated by getting drunk. They got drunk and paraded up and down the road. They carried them up and down the roads. Most all them roads in them little old villages were dirt roads, and they just walked and carry them and get drunk. And they dressed up colorful in white costumes and stuff and paraded up and down the road. And when they buried them on hillsides most of the time. And according to how wealthy they were, is how high on the hills they got buried. It started off at the bottom, very poor, all the way up to the very rich on top. And then they located them on that hill according to how wealthy they were.
Were there a lot of graves at the bottom of the hill?
Yeah, there were a lot of graves everywhere dug around. We was pulling security duty one time out there, and they'd have to move a lot of graves sometimes. Or we had a couple inside our compound on our base there that they'd have to come in, and they'd let them come in and clean it. If we had some that they'd move. I remember one time we had this security guard. He was in the tower. We had a tower out there in one of the areas. And he decided one day that he wanted to shoot him a pheasant. He was setting up fire in the tower, and he had him some extra bullets somehow or another. We never didn't know how he got the extra bullets, but he cut out on that pheasant with an M16. And this infantry unit, we had an infantry unit stationed there close by, and they was outside the perimeter fence. They called in on the radio that somebody had them pinned down with an M16. And of course, that brought all of the head company commander and everybody out there, and they went up and checked him out. And he done, his weapon was clean. He had all of it. They counted his ammo and everything. He had all of his ammo was counted for. So, you know, what he had done, though, he had him a gun cleaning kit there, and we usually kept one in our pack if we wanted him. And he cleaned that weapon real quick, so what he had done after he had fired it, because it took him pretty good little bit to get down there, and he had plenty of time to clean it before they got there. And where he got the extra rounds of ammo, I don't know, but it was kind of funny, you know, him shooting at a pheasant. But he didn't get the pheasant either. There was a thing about it. But you know, there's a lot of funny things happen like that. There's a lot of dangerous things happen too. He could have very easily been killed if somebody thought he was a sniper, you know, and could have shot him real easy.
When did you get to come home from Korea?
I left Korea in September of 1970. Got home somewhere around the 22nd September. I was discharged from the military, Fort Lewis, Washington.
And from there, you came back to Macedonia, Alabama?
Yeah, come back to Macedonia.
All right. Most of your growing up, as far as school and high school and stuff, was in the 60s, right?
Yeah, mid-50s through the...
But most of your school when you were older was in the 60s.
Right.
Were there ever any blacks around where you lived at?
No, there wasn't any blacks at all. We didn't go to school with any black people. We didn't have any on Sand Mountain at all. You couldn't hardly even get them across Sand Mountain, much less go to school out there.
So you were never really around any black people?
No, only time we saw any black people was like we went to the city to shop or something.
Did you know about when George Wallace stood in the door of the University of Alabama and vowed not to let the black students in? You heard about that, right?
Yeah, we heard about
that. Well, what did people think about that around here?
Well, the people on Sand Mountain, a lot of them have always been prejudiced and they thought it was a big thing for George to stand in the door.
They supported him.
Yeah, they supported him, but then they thought it was a big letdown, too, when they let him go around the other door and go in. But they supported George Wallace. Most all people on Sand Mountain did.